Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends and neighbors. On this Friday morning, March 8, about 8:30 in the morning in our nation's capital, welcome back to the Bill Press Pod, and welcome to this week's Reporters Roundtable. Well, reporters had to run hard and in many directions this week to keep up with the news, culminating with President Biden's State of the Union speech last night, maybe best described as fiery. While the importance of such speeches is usually exaggerated, let's admit, this year's State of the Union had special importance because, coming just 2 days after Super Tuesday, it was in effect for Joe Biden the kickoff of the 2024 general election campaign, which we now know will be Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. But big question, now that Nikki Haley's dropped out of the 2024 primary, what happens to her voters? Will they automatically switch to Donald Trump? And are there any obstacles that could upset Trump's apparent glide path to the nomination? One thing we know for sure, thanks to the Supreme Court, Trump will be on the ballot in all 50 states, but we still don't know, and may not know until May, whether or not he'll have to face criminal charges this year or be granted immunity. Whoa, so much to talk about, so little time. So let's jump right in with today's panel. Sarah Weier, Washington reporter for the LA Times. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Thanks. Welcome back. Amanda Becker, politics reporter for 19th News. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And Brian Beutler, author of the Off Message newsletter and co-host of the Politics podcast. Hello, Brian.
It's great to be with you, Bill.
Thank you. Good to have you there. So as we said, sometimes these State of the Unions are given more importance than they deserve. This one, I think rightfully so, maybe had a little more attention because it came right 2 days after Super Tuesday, as I mentioned. And Joe Biden, it seemed, had two big challenges. One, to show why he deserved another 4 years, and maybe more importantly, to show whether or not he was really up to it after all the questions about his age. So I just want to ask each of you for a quick take on how did Biden do last night? Amanda?
It was as good as I could have expected, to be honest. I thought he delivered a pretty, all things considered, strong performance across a variety of topics. I do think there were a couple little things that I noted when I was watching that I think were missed opportunities. But overall, I think he did a really good job.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of those issues by issues here just a little bit. But first, just in general, overall. So what do you think, Sarah?
I think he did exactly what he needed to. I mean, this was the biggest platform he has to talk to the American people of either party, people who aren't going to be paying attention to his rallies or his campaign. And so, you know, he was upbeat. He was optimistic. He was way more energetic than I think anyone was expecting. He did, you know, talk over some of his own laugh lines or applause lines, but, you know, he'd made no major gaffes. And I don't think you're going to hear, at least for a few days, you're not going to hear much about low energy.
Yeah. And Brian, you were out late last night with your newsletter on a quick take on the so wrap it up for us. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be curious to see what the ratings were. And I'm sorry if they're already out and I just haven't seen them yet, because I feel like the news environment of the last month or so has been geared towards drawing a lot of eyeballs to the speech, because it's all been about how old Joe Biden is and how he can't string a sentence together. And so I think that the anticipation was very high for this speech, and you know, people who wanted him to do well were probably watching it between the gaps in their fingers. But then having drawn an audience, seeing if he would do that, he did the opposite. He gave a really vigorous presentation. So that was very important, obviously. And then yeah. the second thing that stuck out to me is that, you know, one of the challenges he's faced, sort of a gamble he made with his candidacy, is he thought he'd the race would come down to him and Donald Trump. People would remember how much they disliked the Trump presidency, and that would more or less be enough to give him an advantage in the polls going into the election. And it hasn't panned out that way, in part because a lot of polls are starting to show people have forgotten a lot of what they once knew about yeah. the Trump presidency. And so that first 15 minutes of the speech or so was like a golden opportunity for him to remind people about why they voted Trump out in the first place. And he sees that opportunity very well.
Right. For those of us who've seen a lot of State of the Unions, I don't know whether anybody else knows, actually, but I did, that the president jumped in before he was even introduced by the speaker. you know, he had that funny line when everybody was applauding so loudly when he took the podium. If I were smart, I'd go home right now, right? But usually, everybody quiets down, then the speaker introduces him, and then they applaud again. Joe Biden just skipped right over that, and he jumped in. And again, foreign policy usually comes toward the end of a State of the Union. Last night, that's where he started, right out of the gun. Here he is.
Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine. But now, assistance to Ukraine is being blocked by those who want to walk away from our world leadership. Now my predecessor tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want. Bowing down to a Russian leader, I think it's outrageous, it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable.
Amanda, that's a shot across Donald Trump's bow for sure, calling him my predecessor. He repeated that phrase 13 times during the speech without ever mentioning Trump's name.
It was a lot of focus on Trump, considering, again, he was never bringing him up by name. But I mean, you know, he was talking about him in the context of the immigration bill, in the context of the 2017 tax overhaul that Republicans did. Some of the biggest kind of reaction moments of the night were when he was weighing in on the former president. I think this was very clearly a State of the Union, not about the last year of his presidency, but about his reelect. And so the focus on Donald Trump in this kind of roundabout way makes sense.
And picking up Ukraine, which most of the people in that room might support continuing, but cannot get a vote because Mike Johnson won't bring it up.
Exactly.
Was a pretty bold move on his part. It's kind of calling their bluff, basically, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, I also think it was striking that he chose to open the night talking about Ukraine and Russia and kind of putting it in the historical context of an assault on democracy. I mean, he went all the way back to the 1940s and, you know, likened kind of drew the parallel of how a speech was given in that chamber against Hitler as he was, you know, amassing power in Europe. And then he said, you know, freedom and democracy are under assault here as well. And, you know, called on aid for Ukraine to stop Putin. And, you know, I really thought that was a strong opening last night.
Yeah, it was FDR versus Hitler and me versus Vladimir Putin, basically was his message. So another issue where he just jumped right in, Sarah, with the Supreme Court sitting right there in front of him, right? He made sure reproductive rights was going to be a big part of his message and his campaign. And here's the president.
My predecessor came to office determined to see Roe v. Wade overturned. He's the reason it was overturned, and he brags about it. There are state laws banning the freedom to choose, criminalizing doctors, forcing survivors of rape and incest to leave their states to get the treatment they need. Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. And with all due respect, justices, women are not without electoral or political power. You're about to realize just how much you are right about.
I've never seen any direct challenge made to the Supreme Court in any State of the Union. Sarah, what was your take?
I mean, it was kind of shocking. He was coming out full bore on anyone who opposes his policies. And I don't mean shocking in a bad way. It just kind of took you aback because you don't normally see that in the State of the Union. I've been in the room, you know, almost a dozen times, and you know, it's stayed, and there's clapping, and you know, we've gotten a lot of screaming now from the from the floor, but it was very unusual to see, you know, one branch directly attack another like that. And then you have the cameras pan then to the conservative justices' faces. It was really a standout moment. I think we're going to see a lot of clips circulating. And, you know, honestly, that's how the majority of Americans see the State of the Union now, is, you know, clips and follow-up articles the next day rather than watching it live. And right. So that was a good viral, you know, 10, 15-second clip right he set right there.
And, I mean, I know this is your territory, but in terms of electoral and political clout, he wasn't exaggerating, was he?
No. I mean, every time an amendment or legislation has come up specifically regarding abortion that, you know, American voters have been able to cast a ballot on since Roe v. Wade was, you know, struck down, it's failed resoundingly. And you can tell that Democrats are intending on making reproductive rights a major part of this election. You know, he used the line directly from their opinion. I mean, he was quoting back to them and then just adding a little, you know, knife twist at the end.
Right. And then we get to the border, where the president not only came prepared to talk about it, but he was ready to fire back at Republicans, maybe expecting there might be some dissent from the audience. Brian, let's listen to the president and his back and forth with some of the Republicans.
In November, my team began serious negotiation with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill? I'll be darned. That's amazing. I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress in the Senate to demand they block the bill. It's not about him. It's not about me. Folks, get this bill done. We need to act now.
So, Brian, showed little life, a little spunk there, huh? Again, my predecessor.
Yeah, but, you know, to me, the most striking thing about that moment was what was unspoken, because if you were watching and not listening, as he was having this back and forth with, like, the MAGA wing of the House Republican conference, the camera panned to Senator James Lankford, who's the Republican senator who wrote that bill.
Right.
And he was angry at the Republicans because they killed his bill. And as Biden was describing the terms of the bill and how conservative it was and how much conservative support it had, James Lankford silently mouthed true. And to me, it echoed almost like a mirror image of you guys were speaking a moment ago about how unusual it is for the Supreme Court to get a tongue lashing at a State of the Union. But Barack Obama did it in 2010 or 2011 about Citizens United. And in that speech, the camera panned to Justice Samuel Alito, and he shook his head and mouthed the word no, and he hasn't appeared at a State of the Union since then. And that episode, 15 years ago almost, you know, got singled out as Obama overstepping decorum. And this time when Biden went after the Supreme Court, he kind of stopped himself for a second. And he said, with all due respect to the Supreme Court, because he has this institutionalist bone in his body, but with the immigration split screen of the Republicans braying so that they didn't get tagged with killing their own bill, and James Lankford saying, no, that's exactly what you did, I think will you sort of play well in days and months to come.
It was striking, and you could clearly see he was saying, that's true, right? That's true, as the president ticked off exactly what was in that bill. And I thought an embarrassing moment for Mike Johnson sitting in back of him, because, of course, as many people pointed out, if he allowed that bill to a vote on the floor of the House, it would clearly
pass. Yeah, just like Ukraine aid.
Yeah, exactly. Right. January 6th was another thing the president brought up again, pointing to his predecessor.
My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that. This is the moment to speak the truth and to bury the lies. Here's the simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win.
Maybe that's an old line, Sarah, but still a pretty effective one. And he did that in the chamber, which was under attack 3 years ago.
You know, it was really striking knowing that he was standing maybe 100 feet away from where the rioters broke the glass. You know, he had just walked through that door that's now been double reinforced to prevent something like that from ever happening. You know, and in a room surrounded with people who, you know, have echoed some of that rhetoric that it was just, oh, a tourist visit. You know, it was a very direct, very direct statement. You know, it was a big applause line for Democrats. Republicans obviously didn't, you know, leap to their feet too much on that. But, you know, he wants to make this election about preserving democracy and about the potential threats we have bubbling up within our own society that could, you know, irrevocably change America. And I wasn't surprised to see it come up so early in the speech, but I was surprised to see it be quite so forceful.
Yeah. I find it striking that the Republicans would not join him in condemning those who attacked them in that very room 3 years ago, but it has become a two-sided political issue, maybe sadly. Amanda, I want to save you to get your take on the after the response of the State of the Union. So let me go back to Brian here for a second, because the other issue, the one everybody was thinking about ahead of time, was, is he too old for the job? Joe Biden, Brian, at the end of his talk, got into that directly.
I've been told I'm too old. I've always known what endures. I've known our North Star. The very idea of America is that we're all created equal and deserves to be treated equally throughout our lives. We've never fully lived up to that idea, but we've never walked away from it either. And I won't walk away from it now. My fellow Americans, the issue facing our nation isn't how old we are, it's how old are our ideas. Hate, anger, revenge, retribution are the oldest of ideas. But you can't lead America with ancient ideas that only take us back. You lead America, the land of possibilities. You need a vision for the future and what can and should be done.
So, Brian, turning age into an experience, into a plus, not a disadvantage. Did it work?
I think so, in part because Republicans, they did this in 2022, that, you know, they talked about how Joe Biden was running the campaign from his basement because he was too sleepy. And it sets the bar extremely low so that it takes one high-profile event for him to prove that it was all just rhetoric. And they kind of fell into the exact same trap over the last, well, for a long while, but particularly since the Robert Hur report came out a few weeks ago. I think it's a testament to how stinging the speech was, how effective it was, that, you know, if he had delivered a sort of soporific speech, if he didn't have a lot of energy, that's what they would have talked about. And if he was offbeat in the thematic content of the speech, they would home in on some gaffe or on some aspect of Joe Biden's agenda that was highly unpopular and fixate on that. What they're saying instead was that, like the nice ones are saying that he was too loud and energetic, too feisty. And, you know, the most dishonest and aggressive ones are saying, oh, well, he must be on drugs. Like, that's Donald Trump. And former Arkansas governor Mike Huckabee suggested it as well. And if, you know, if that's all they have, a complaint about how energetic the speech was, which steps on their previous complaint, which is that Joe Biden's too tired, that means they're not working with much.
Right. So, Amanda, the response to the State of the Union was given by Alabama Senator Katie Britt. Speaking from her kitchen table from Alabama, in what was described as a, well, she used the word, breathtaking appearance. But the critics didn't think much of it. Amanda, how about you?
It kind of reminded me of a version of Trump's American Carnage speech, half of it, but delivered in a kitchen with like cookies in the oven or something. So I was just watching it, feeling kind of a disconnect between the setting and what I was hearing. It was obviously focused a lot on illegal immigration. She was talking about, you know, victims of sex trafficking, a nursing student that was killed by someone who was coming into the, who had been in this country illegally. So she was really kind of painting a bleak picture of the state of the country right now. And I'm not sure how that will resonate with people. But and then Trump's reaction was even kind of more of a disconnect, because he said she was a great contrast to an angry and obviously disturbed president. And I didn't have kind of the same reaction as the former president. It was interesting. And again, you know, like there's talk about her as a possible VP for him. But I would, you know, encourage everyone to remember the long line of Republicans who have delivered this rebuttal and or State of the Union in not, you know, to a State of the Union and not gone on to do much. I mean, this isn't necessarily a position that vaults you into a new tier.
And if you don't believe that, ask Bobby Jindal from Louisiana, right?
Yeah.
For example, right? I think that the most cutting comment I heard about it was that the comics on Saturday Night Live are fighting with each other over who gets to play her Saturday night.
I mean, it's a very it will be a very easy rebuttal to character.
There you go. Right. And she and all those horrible things she said with that big smile on her face, too. Mm-hmm. Right. It was sort of at any rate, not a good acting job, I don't think, at all. But let's that's enough for the State of the Union. Let's take a quick break and then get back and where this all leads to, because we are now, like it or not, full bore into the 2024 general election, which promises to be the longest in history and maybe one of the most bitter and brutal in history. And we'll take a quick break and then back with our panel, Sarah Wire from the LA Times, Amanda Becker from 19th News, and Brian Beutler from Off Message Newsletter. Today's Reporters Roundtable on the Bill Press Pod is brought to you by the United Auto Workers Union. Check out their website at uaw.org. Of course, their president, Sean Fain, was in the box with the First Lady last night at the State of the Union, still celebrating the huge win of the UAW over the Big Three this year. President Biden went out and walked the picket line, first president in history to walk a picket line. And the union has now announced that they have set their sights for later this year on non-union manufacturers, including Toyota, Honda, Nissan, Subaru, VW, and Mercedes-Benz. You know that they will be going at that with all that they learned from the last successful strike against the Big Three. We salute the members of the UAW, thank them for the support of the Bill Press Pod, and again, urge you to check out their website at uaw.org.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with today's Reporters Roundtable here on the Bill Press Pod. Glad to welcome back Sarah Weyer, Washington reporter for the LA Times, Amanda Becker, politics reporter for 19th News, and Brian Beutler, author of the Off Message newsletter, co-host of the Politics Podcast. So, Brian, we're into 2024 now, and barring something that we can't imagine, I guess it's going to be Trump versus Biden and everybody else just getting out of the way, right?
I think that's right. I guess the potential pitfalls are that we don't know when the Supreme Court will rule. Trump has an interlocutory appeal claiming that he has immunity for trying to overturn the 2020 election because those were actions he took in his official capacity as president. Very few people think that they're going to grant him that because it would essentially upend the rule of law in the country forever. But it will delay. It has already delayed the trial. And if they don't issue the ruling until late June, which is sort of the end of their term, it's going to be a big question mark whether there's even time for a trial between then and November. He is going to face trial in New York, it seems, this spring for the hush money scandal from the 2016 election.
Starting March 25, actually. Yep.
Correct. And mm-hmm. And Trump has fewer options to delay that one. So he's pretty much stuck with it, I think. And then on the Biden end of things, it's basically full steam ahead. Dean Phillips was his only like semi-credible in-party challenger. He's dropped out. Marianne Williamson, I think, unsuspended her campaign, but she's not performing well. So it's a one-on-one race now, insofar as either Joe Biden or Donald Trump, barring something truly calamitous, will be president next year.
And I saw today the No Labels people are meeting today. They're still trying to come up with a presidential candidate, but they've also said their goal is no longer to be on all 50, the ballots in all 50 states. And of course, they still don't have a candidate because everybody else has turned them down. So, Amanda, what happens to the Nikki Haley voters? And they're not to be dismissed easily, right? You got 25, 30, 35%, 40% maybe in some states. Where do they go?
I mean, that's the big question, right? And they're both of the candidates are going to start going after them. Trump and Biden have already kind of weighed in on these voters. I think Biden so far, I mean, it hasn't been very long, but Biden so far is making a more explicit, direct appeal to them. Literally saying, like, come over, we want you. let's talk. Here's the thing. If you looked at that group of voters in exit polling, and you're right, it's not an insignificant group of voters. I mean, it wasn't nearly enough to get her traction in the primary, but it's certainly enough to affect the outcome of a general election in some areas. If you looked at exit polling, many people who were voting for Haley, it was a vote against Donald Trump. Anyone who pretty much, if you look at the polling, who was a Republican who voted for Biden in 2020, was backing Haley in that primary. And so I think that, you know, while they are up for grabs, I think probably President Biden has an easier road to win over a significant portion of those voters who were backing Haley before this.
And one issue, Sarah, that these Haley voters said in their exit or entrance polls or whatever, was that they could not vote or would not vote for anyone who'd been convicted of a felony. So is that the big obstacle that could knock Donald Trump off the glide path to the nomination? As we know, he's got four more trials coming up. He's facing 91 counts.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's really going to come down to whether it actually has to be a conviction or not, if being accused of 91 felonies is enough. Mm-hmm. Because we're not sure, and we won't know for a while, of how many of these trials he's actually going to face before November. Obviously, there's the one up in New York that's going to start later this month, but it's considered to be, you know, one of the weaker of the four criminal cases. It's about, you know, campaign finance, and it's really hard to get people excited about that. And the other trials are, you know, either being pushed back or on hold because of the Supreme Court. And you know, although Jack Smith, the special counsel, has said that, you know, they're going to move forward despite the proximity to the election, you know, it takes time to do all the proper filings and you know, discovery for these cases. And I'm not convinced it's going to happen before November. So when it really comes down to it, you know, it might not, people are going to have to, we're going to have to look at how voters are really looking at the criminal charges and how seriously they're taking them.
Right. And it is uncharted territory, as we say every time we talk about this, right? We've never had a president charged with a former president charged with a crime. We've never had a former president in a courtroom defending himself. We've never had a former president convicted, if that happens, of a felony. So we really don't know. Amanda, I want to come back to you on the question of, we just talked a little bit about Donald Trump going after the Nikki Haley voters. No clear sign of that yet. In fact, he has said at one time, right, if you're not with me, you're against me, right? And we don't want you to come into the MAGA camp. And also this week, he talked about schools. He talked about education. One would think that if he were reaching out to so-called suburban women, Nikki Haley supporters, he might be very strong on support for public education. But here is Donald Trump on schools and vaccines.
And I will not give one penny to any school that has a vaccine mandate or mask mandate.
Amanda, that's every school in the country, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think more than anything, what that showed is that Donald Trump, as a parent, was unaware of what his children had to do in terms of their health care to go to school. I mean, they probably went to private school, so maybe there weren't as many rules. But, you know, I remember having to show proof of vaccine when I was in, you know, third and fourth grade in the 1980s in order to enroll in public school. I mean, this is how we have eradicated diseases in this country. And so while I think he probably thought he was talking about COVID and maybe a couple things, like I'm not sure that, you know, moms across this country are going to be really excited for measles outbreaks in their schools.
Oh, there you go. All right. So one other, just wrapping up here, so focused on Super Tuesday to the finalization, if you will, of the team for the both nominees for both major parties. But there were a couple of other races around the country that were significant. Especially, Brian, maybe the governor's race in North Carolina, where Democrats rallied behind Josh Stein, known as a very careful, orderly, serious kind of person, and Republicans rallied behind Mark Robinson, who is known as basically Donald Trump on steroids. Here is Mark Robinson making something I never thought I'd hear from an American political candidate today, but Mark Robinson.
I absolutely want to go back to the America where women couldn't vote. Do you know why? Because in those days, we had people who fought for real social change, and they were called Republicans.
Isn't this taking the MAGA crowd to a new level, back to where women did not have the right to vote? Brian, what the hell's going on?
That's quite bad enough, obviously, but the subtext you didn't mention is that Josh Stein, the Democratic candidate, is Jewish, and Mark Robinson, there's another episode where it turns out he's a Holocaust denier, or at least he dabbles in Holocaust denialism, and he's endorsed by Trump, so he's essentially untouchable in the race, and this is, you know, to sort of tie it back to the discussion about what happens to Nikki Haley voters and what voters will do if Donald Trump is convicted, or whether just the criminal charges themselves are enough. You know, I know this is something that that bothers genuinely strategically minded Republican operatives, is that Donald Trump has so much faith in his loyalist faction and thinks that they're so robust and large enough that they'll just propel him and everyone he endorses to victory. But like the record shows that's not true. And it's not true because they do things that turn off the sorts of voters who might prefer Nikki Haley to Joe Biden, but will take Joe Biden over Donald Trump, right? He calls Nikki Haley bird brain, and he calls her by Nimrata, which is her name, but to remind people that she's not white, essentially. And he says, you know, you're not welcome if you supported her. And Joe Biden says, we can find common ground, come to me. And maybe he only gets 10% or 15% of those voters. But elections turn on margins, not on absolute turnout. So Donald Trump can turn out 100% of his base and lose those Haley voters, and that could be the difference in an election. And it's a similar effect can happen if he's convicted. Most of his supporters will figure out a way to justify it. They'll say that the jury is from New York and so biased against him. But if 5% or 10% of them say, you know what, I can't, that's a bridge too far, that could turn the election. And if they say, I can't be in a party that countenances somebody like Mark Robinson, who denies the Holocaust and say women shouldn't have the right to vote, that could turn the election too. And this is just it's in the nature of the MAGA movement and Donald Trump to act this way. And it's sort of antithetical to maximizing appeal in an election.
Right. Brian, I meant to ask earlier, so let me give you a chance to tell people how they can find you on the Off Message newsletter.
Sure. Yeah. They just go to offmessage.net. There are options to subscribe available there. And most of the pieces I write, I offer at least a free preview of. And my Friday articles are free in total. So people can poke around and read a bit and see what they like and hopefully pick up a subscription.
And I've subscribed, enjoy it very much, learn a lot from them, and encourage everybody to check it out. Offmessage.net, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, panelists, for taking a good look at the last night's State of the Union and the rest of the news of the week as we begin this long and grueling 2024 general election. Big thank you, Sarah Wire, LA Times, Amanda Becker, 19th News, and Brian Beutler from the Off Message newsletter. And now let's sort of sum things up with the one story in the week, our favorite story of the week, the one that really caught your attention, made you stop in your tracks at least for a moment and think about it. What caught your attention this week, Amanda?
I am going to go with another Isaac Chotiner Q&A in the New Yorker. As you know, I love them. I think this is only the second time I've done it for this show. This one is with Senator Chris Van Hollen. And the title is Why America Isn't Using Its Leverage with Israel. And I just think these Q&As, which have been done with like really key members of Biden's administration on all topics, but especially on Israel and Gaza right now, are just some of the more thoughtful, in-depth kind of exchanges I've seen on this topic. I mean, our the way we consume news doesn't always lend itself to kind of thoughtful, in-depth conversations on topics. And I just really appreciated this, and it was out yesterday online at The New Yorker.
Very good. Thank you. That I love it when our regular panelists always have kind of their go-to places for their favorite stories, right? Sabrina Siddiqui's famous. She always has a dog story, for example.
You know, every now and then I mixed it up. I did talk about a Real Housewives story once.
So. Okay. And Sarah, what was your favorite story of the week?
So I tend to bring in the obscure science-y stuff. Mine is about researchers with the New England Aquarium who are surveying waters out of outside of Martha's Vineyard and came across a gray whale. And I don't know if you know, but gray whales have been extinct in the Atlantic for the last 200 years.
No, we know them in California, but they're not Atlantic, right?
And I was very excited to see the story because I like sea life, but the gut punch at the end was the reason we're seeing gray whales in the Atlantic is because of climate change, and they can pass over the Northern Passage over Canada to get there. So it was an exciting story at first, and then they're just kind of punch at the end of, you know, they're repopulating an area that they no longer exist in, but only because of climate change.
Yeah, boy. And that's a longer migration than down to Baja, California. Which,
exactly.
Wow. And Brian, your favorite story? What caught your attention this week?
Yeah, so everything before Thursday is a blur to me. So I'm going to stick with the theme of the show, the State of the Union address. So Republicans have a little bit of a quandary because they want in this election to be able to reprise the old Ronald Reagan refrain, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? But of course, 4 years ago, everyone was trapped in their houses and there was no toilet paper at the drugstore. And some of them are just kind of brazing it out, right? Like Elise Stefanik at the GOP press conference this week just said it, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And of course, the resounding response is, yes, we are better off than we were 4 years ago. But credit to Katie Britt in her State of the Union response. She indicated like a dash of integrity more than Elise Stefanik has, or maybe it's shame or something like that. Set aside all the weird theatrics of that speech. When it came time to try to frame the election in those terms, she said, are you better off than you were 3 years ago? when, of course, Joe Biden was president. And so whether the answer is yes or no, everyone knows they're better off now than they were in the last year of Trump's term. And I just thought it was so funny.
That is, and I missed that, right? But it's very telling, very telling. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Okay, and I got to tell you, my favorite story of the week, it's a feel-good story. Every once in a while, there's so much bad news, we need a feel-good story. This one is out of Coronado Island, California, you know, right off San Diego, where the Navy base is. And it dates back to 1939. There was a Chinese couple, the last name Dong, who were looking for a place to rent in Coronado. San Diego back then was a really extreme right-wing racist town, and they could not find anybody who would rent a home to them until a black couple living on Coronado, a Navy veteran, they spoke up, and they rented this Chinese couple their home. A few years later, they actually sold their home to this Chinese couple who still lived there. The Thompson family rented them, sold them their home, and both couples have lived there all this time, and this week it was announced that the Dong family, who has done very well, to show their gratitude to the couple that sold them their home, the Thompsons, they are donating $5 million in scholarships to black college students. So it's a really wonderful story, I think, about people who did a good deed, and now they are helping others as a response to that good deed. So congratulations to the Thompsons, and congratulations to the Dongs as well. A story like that makes you proud to be an American. Good for them. And good for our panelists for a great job today. Taking a look at the State of the Union and other news of the week. Brian Beutler again from Off Message Newsletter, Amanda Becker from 19th News, and Sarah Weyer from the LA Times. And thanks to all of you good friends for joining us. We invite you to have a great weekend and then come back and see us on Tuesday. Very excited Tuesday. We're going to be talking to the youngest member of the United States Congress, Maxwell Frost, representing Florida's 10th Congressional District. Elected at the age of 25, and we'll see what he has to say about young people and 2024 and what's the message to reach them. Maxwell Frost joining us next, and we hope you all be there for the next edition on Tuesday, next edition of the Bill Press Pod. Have a great weekend.